It is Monday, November 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, a week of memorials for the late Cuban leader Fidel Castro begins in Havana. We'll look at his controversial legacy.
His death is a time for people to assess the pros and cons, the pluses and minuses of such an historic figure.
The U.S. Air Force says it does not have enough fighter squadrons to meet its needs, and we look at films that may be contenders for the Academy Awards. It's all ahead. Cubans massed in Havana's Revolution Square Monday to pay their final respects to the late Fidel Castro, the communist guerrilla leader who led a revolution in 1959 and ruled the island nation for nearly half a century. Mr. Castro died late Friday of an undisclosed illness at age 90. His remains will be buried in the southeastern city of Santiago December 4th. President Barack Obama issued a statement offering condolences and saying this moment fills Cubans with powerful emotions. He said his administration, in normalizing relations 2 years ago, was pursuing a future in which bilateral relations can be defined by things shared rather than by differences. President-elect Donald Trump, who is to be sworn in January 20th, called Fidel Castro a brutal dictator who oppressed his own people for nearly six decades. He said he hopes the late Cuban leader's death marks a move away from the horrors endured for far too long and toward a future in which the Cuban people finally live in freedom. His incoming White House Chief of Staff, Reince Priebus, suggested to U.S. television viewers Sunday changes in Cuba will be necessary in future ties.
We're not going to have a unilateral deal coming from Cuba back to the United States without some changes in their government. Repression, open markets, freedom of religion, political prisoners. These things need to change in order to have open and free relationships, and that's what President-elect Trump believes, and that's where he's going to head. Talking is fine, but action is something that will be required under a President Trump.
Richard Feinberg is an international economics professor at the University of California, San Diego, and he's a senior fellow at the Washington-based Brookings Institution. He tells International Edition's Victor Beatty, Mr. Castro's death is significant on a number of levels.
He was a very major figure in the history of the mid-20th century. He dominated the headlines so many times for transforming Cuba into his concept of a socialist utopia, for defying the United States and surviving miraculously so many efforts by so many administrations to dislodge him. He was, of course, very controversial in his support for revolutionary movements, particularly in Latin America and Africa in his early years. And his death is a time for people to assess the pros and cons, the pluses and minuses of such an historic figure.
A Nobel Literature laureate, Mario Vargas Llosa of Peru, predicts that Fidel Castro's death will change the face of Cuba. What say you?
Well, Fidel Castro has largely been out of the center of policymaking for the last 10 years. So it's been a very gradual transition in that regard. But as I said, I do think his definitive removal now makes it somewhat easier for Cuba to gradually enter the 21st century, particularly in the area of greater integration into the global economy.
Richard Feinberg said a tougher U.S. stance against Cuba by limiting American visits to the country could actually harm the nation's emerging private sector. Jaime Suchlicki, director of the Institute on Cuba Studies at the University of Miami, said the Castro death is more symbolic than real since he handed over power to his brother, Raul, 10 years ago.
It's an end of an era, but the government remains the same. Raul Castro continues the same policies that Fidel had implemented for some 50 years. He was next to Fidel for all those years, the longest serving Minister of Defense in the history of the world. So nothing really has changed for the daily life of the Cubans.
The death of Fidel Castro came as the U.S. transitions from one administration to another. Do you see any change in U.S. policy given the recent opening of U.S.-Cuba relations?
Well, I think that President Trump will tighten the policies toward Raul Castro, maybe in the area of immigration, maybe reverting some of the unilateral concessions that President Obama gave to Raul Castro, and develop a tougher bargaining position vis-a-vis Cuba. No more freebies like Obama has done.
Jaime Szucslicki said the 85-year-old Raul Castro is in the process of grooming successors and has indicated he plans to step down from the presidency, but not from power, in 2018. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's the reaction like on social media to the Castro death?
Well, we saw a lot of video coming, especially out of the Miami area, where a lot of Cuban dissidents are celebrating the death of Fidel Castro. We saw them waving Cuban flags and shouting different slogans. We also saw a lot of world leaders taking to social media to issue their responses to Fidel Castro's death. And one of them got in a bit of trouble. It was Justin Trudeau, Canadian Prime Minister. Many felt that his eulogy was a bit too kind to Fidel Castro, saying it glossed over many of the human rights abuses and killings that he committed. And the hashtag Trudeau Eulogies was trending, where people were taking famous villains in history and fictional villains and kind of saying that it was a Trudeau eulogy, saying, well, they weren't really that bad, or they're glossing over some of the things that they did. The Prime Minister said that he stands by what he said and stands by his statement. So we'll see if that continues to play out on social media. And then here in the U.S. today, of course, we had Thanksgiving, then Black Friday, the big shopping holiday. Well, today is now Cyber Monday, as people go back to work and get back in front of the computer, all the online deals that people are able to access and sales online. So a lot of people using social media to find those sales, share tips on shopping, free shipping here or X percent off there. A lot of people questioning on social media how much time is being spent maybe away from work shopping instead of working. By one estimate I saw earlier this morning, as much as 4 or 5 hours on average being spent today by U.S. workers shopping instead of working, leading to billions of dollars in sales. So lots of chatter about that, as to be expected. We'll see if that means some exciting presents under the Christmas tree about 3 or 4 weeks from now.
Right, looking for some cyber deals,
yes,
for the holiday shopping. Okay, well, thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. U.S. fact checkers debunk President-elect Donald Trump's claim of massive illegal voting in the election that he won. Three of South African President Jacob Zuma's cabinet ministers want him to resign. Syrian forces seize a key eastern Aleppo district, and 8 people are injured after reports of an active shooter at Ohio State University. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
1,200 kilometers in diameter, bearing 24.41 degrees.
That's tracking right towards us.
Based on current escalation, estimated force of 8,600 newtons.
Scientists say that dust storms on Mars aren't as powerful as the one that set up the plot to the hit movie and book The Martian. But these storms could still present some serious challenges for astronauts who'll someday land on and explore the red planet. Local Martian dust storms are somewhat common and can occasionally grow into regional storms. There have also been rare occasions when the storms can grow into a global event. Researchers at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory are predicting a global Martian dust storm in the next few weeks to a few months. If this prediction is proven correct, it might be possible to develop a system that can forecast future global dust storms on the red planet. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we hear about the Independent Spirit Film Awards. When Iraqi troops began the operation to retake Mosul last month, it was America's F-22 Raptor jets that struck the first Islamic State targets there. But as American pilots keep flying missions abroad, there's been a quiet crisis brewing at home. Some of the Air Force's top generals tell our Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb that if left unchecked, the crisis could degrade the Air Force's frontline capabilities in the coming year.
The call for more combat air power around the world has been answered time and again by Air Force fighter pilots. Years of training and millions of dollars are invested in each pilot who maneuver high-tech aircraft, which have evolved into flying supercomputers. You might expect there'd be plenty of fighter pilots ready to fly fighter jets like the F-22 Raptors behind me, but that's actually not the case. The U.S. Air Force is authorized to have 3,500 fighter pilots, but they're 725 fighter pilots short.
Hey, good afternoon. Have a seat. Relax.
Major General Scott Vanderham.
So these are all the projects.
And Lieutenant General John Cooper are in charge of managing manpower for pilots and maintenance crew. They sat down together for the first time exclusively with VOA to discuss the growing crisis.
How deep can this hole be dug before it has to be pulled out of and you can't get creative anymore and you just need more?
I'd say we're there. We have no margin, and that's what you're kind of speaking to. We have too few squadrons to meet the combat commander's need.
The recent drawdown came about because of budget decreases as the U.S. left Iraq in 2010 and was expected to leave Afghanistan.
The big variable is tempo. We didn't plan for ISIS. We planned to come home.
164 Bravo 7.
At Joint Base Langley-Eustis, pilots say longer and more frequent deployments have devastated morale.
We were on 45-day rotations, then they made it 90-day rotations, then they made 120-day rotations. Now it's six-month rotations with one-year rotations sprinkled on top of it for key positions.
The deployments aren't the only thing causing pilots to quit. While stationed at home, pilots often have to work extra hours to finish administrative tasks, in addition to maintaining their flying skills.
I have a very high demand signal for my pilots, and I have not quite enough of them.
This is where all the pucks start right here, and we start putting them on the board. So everybody here is scheduled, is doing something. There's no slop.
The Air Force is training about 135 more pilots in this fiscal year than 2 years ago, but that effort appears to have been undercut, since it only retained about 40% of fighter pilots up for contract renewals in 2016.
It's almost a crisis within a crisis.
It is, because we need to retain, Carla, about 65%, about two-thirds of those pilots to fill the slots that they need to fill.
The fighter pilot shortage has spiked at a time when commercial airlines, which offer more stable schedules at home and the potential for higher pay, are looking for more pilots who love to fly.
If it's up to just me, I definitely would stay in, but my family has a vote, and so if they're doing well and they're enjoying where we're at, then we'll stay. If they want me to leave to do something else, then that's probably what I'll end up doing.
Former fighter pilot Tom Hunt left the Air Force in 2013 and now earns more money as a Washington, D.C. lawyer. He says the Air Force could resolve the shortage if it wanted to.
Some people say, you can't throw money at everything. You can. You absolutely can. If you said the pilot bonus is now $500,000, single lump sum payment, I guarantee you'll solve your pilot shortage.
The Air Force is asking Congress for money to raise the bonus up to $48,000 per year, the first such bonus increase since 1999. The Pentagon hopes it will be enough to retain experienced pilots needed to keep up the Air Force's fast-paced operations and train the new recruits. For now, the generals say they are still able to carry out all the fighter jet sorties or flights needed on the front lines abroad. But if the efforts to resolve the fighter pilot crisis fail, they will quickly lose that ability.
We're looking at it right now, and we may have to, within the next calendar year, start to take some degradations in the frontline squadrons.
Those degradations mean the Air Force wouldn't be able to deploy its pilots as quickly, which brings the risk for more conflict casualties. And even if the Air Force does everything possible to increase fighter pilot numbers, the solution is more than a decade away. Carla Babb, VOA News, Joint Base Langley-Eustis.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. Nominations for the 2017 Independent Spirit Film Awards have been handed out, with two coming-of-age stories, Moonlight and American Honey, gathering six nominations. As International Edition's David Byrd tells us, the awards are often a predictor of Academy Award success.
What you looking at me like that for? What, man? Come on, you just drove down here? Yeah.
Moonlight tells the story of a young African-American man who grows into adulthood in a hard Miami neighborhood. American Honey is the tale of a teenage runaway who travels across the Midwestern United States with a band of outcasts. Both films received six nominations for the Independent Spirit Awards. The awards celebrate low-budget independent films that are often Oscar contenders. The past three winners of the Independent Spirit Awards, Spotlight, Birdman, and 12 Years a Slave, have gone on to win the Academy Award for Best Picture. Josh Welsh is the president of Film Independent. He says this year's nominees show more diversity than last year's Oscar field, where all the acting nominees were white.
There's a lot of diversity in the Independent Spirit Award nominations today. I think half of all the directors nominated this year are women. And I think there's a good amount of ethnic diversity and LGBT as well. I think that speaks to, I don't think that's specifically about this award show. I think that's about independent film in general. It tends to be a more diverse, inclusive sector of the entertainment industry. And so the awards here reflect that.
Actress Jenny Slate announced the nominations with actor Edgar Ramirez. Slate says that the independent spirit films offer a more diverse perspective than mainstream features.
The environment in our country is one of fear and restriction and isolation and panic. And I think when you get a group of individuals together who have lots of different messages and experiences, that's when you really start to adjust and realize that you need to be a human and be kind. That's what we need right now. I'm not seeing enough of it.
I think the idea was that you would relocate.
Relocate to where?
Well, if you look, as you can see, you know, your brother worked everything out extremely carefully.
He can't have meant that.
Kenneth Lonergan's New England-based family drama, Manchester by the Sea, got five nominations. Jackie, which tells the story of John F. Kennedy's assassination from the point of view of his widow, Jacqueline Kennedy, got four nods. Chris Gardner is a staff writer at The Hollywood Reporter. He says that while some Spirit Award winners will go on to Oscar success, others will not get the recognition that they deserve.
Perhaps Moonlight, Loving, Manchester by the Sea, these are all films that probably will factor into the Academy Awards race, but some of these other smaller movies like Chronic or maybe American Honey, while the recognition here today is deserved, according to the voters, this may be the end of the road for them in terms of high-profile awards recognition.
The Independent Spirit Awards are open to films that are made for less than $20 million. That left out some other films that are generating Oscar buzz, including the musical La La Land, the thriller Nocturnal Animals, and the adoption drama Lion. The 2017 Independent Spirit Awards will be handed out at a ceremony in Santa Monica, California on February 25th. the day before the Oscars. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
Thanks very much, David. Sounds like some very interesting films there. Well, that is our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. We have a range of stories you might be interested in. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On President Barack Obama's recent and final overseas trip as U.S. president, he gave a ringing endorsement of democracy in its birthplace, Athens, Greece. Mr. Obama noted that 25 centuries ago, in the rocky hills around Athens, a new idea emerged.
Demokratia. Kratos. Kratos, the power, the right to rule, comes from thymos, the people. The notion that we are citizens, not servants, but stewards of our society. The belief in equality before the law, not just for a few, but for the many. Not just for the majority, but also the minority.
Mr. Obama observed that throughout human history, there have been those who argue that people cannot handle democracy, that they need to be told what to do. But, he said, the fundamental desire to have control of our lives and our future, these yearnings are universal. They burn in every human heart. President Obama pointed out that the United States supports democratic governance not just because it comports with the values the U.S. holds dear, but also because history has demonstrated that democracies tend to be more just and more stable and more successful.
In contrast to regimes that rule by coercion, democracies are rooted in consent of the governed. Citizens know that there's a path for peaceful change, including the moral force of nonviolence. And that brings a stability that so often can facilitate economic growth.
President Obama also noted that democracies are less likely to fight wars among themselves, and because of their inclusiveness and strength, are more welcoming to refugees and people in need. In addition, that inclusiveness and strength enable democracies to stand up to those who seek to change people's way of life through violence, while at the same time hindering those in power from betraying fundamental democratic values. President Obama acknowledged that in a globalized world, where people from a variety of backgrounds try to live together, the practice of democracy can be difficult. But he emphasized, it is democracy that allows us to bend the arc of history, in Dr. Martin Luther King's words, to justice. In this great, imperfect, but necessary system of self-government, power and progress will always come from the demos, from we the people, said Mr. Obama. And as long as we are true to that system of self-government, our futures will be bright.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C.
Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.